So we're continuing in a little mini-series for the summer, which is exploring some of our favourite psalms. And I don't know if I asked you what your favourite psalm is, whether you would know straight away. Certainly when I was... Debbie's nodding definitely. Ruth's looking upwards and thinking, I'm not sure. So there'll be a difference as to whether you know it right away or you think if I gave it some thought. When I was considering what is my favourite psalm, it was a little bit like being asked, what's my favourite film? And I've seen more than 150 films in my life, which there are psalms. But actually, there can be the right film for the right occasion. So there are moments when I love a thriller like Rear Window by Alfred Hitchcock. And if you've not seen that, you need to see it. But other times, I'll enjoy Raiders of the Lost Ark and just the fun of adventure. I have a soft spot for Anchorman, it's one of the recent comedies. And I even have a guilty pleasure of Dirty Dancing. And there is a time and there is a place for those films. And I couldn't tell you which one of those is my favourite. I can't answer that question categorically that my favourite film is. And likewise, I haven't found myself able to say my favourite psalm is. So tonight, I'm going to share a little bit from Psalm 139, which is a favourite psalm of mine. So not necessarily my favourite or categorically, but a favourite psalm of mine. And as we look through some of these verses together, I'm just going to tell a few stories as to why that is my favourite psalm, why at different moments in my life it's come to mean different things, and then hopefully draw some of the truth from the verses together. So if you've not got it open, then please grab a Bible. It's on around page 628 in most of the church Bibles. And so the first instance where this psalm, I remember hearing of this psalm, was at a Sunday school class. And we were asked, what does it mean that you are fearfully and wonderfully made? What does it mean that you are fearfully and wonderfully made? And I sat there as an opinionated 14-year-old thinking I had all the answers to every question and realised I had none to that question. What does it mean for me to be fearfully and wonderfully made? And I still don't particularly know. I'm sorry if you're sat there thinking, oh, is he going to tell us what that means? Well, I'm not. But I know that as a 14-year-old who thought he knew a lot, recognising that I knew very little, but how mind-blowing it was to think that I was fearfully and wonderfully made, as it describes in this psalm and as we've just sung together. That we are fearfully and wonderfully made by the Creator of the universe. The attention to detail which he has in us is incredible. And, you know, speak to John, you know, someone who knows a lot about sort of biology, speak to Megan as a doctor, you know, they'll tell you about the intricacies of the human body. And it's amazing. I remember being in a year 9 class as a teaching assistant down in Cambridge, and they showed the video of the kind of how the embryo develops in the mother's womb. And as it then describes some of the physiological changes to the woman's body, you're like, this couldn't have been accident, this couldn't have been chance. And I couldn't say that to the pupils, but as I sat and watched that video, I was amazed, realizing that for myself. So I praise you, as it says in verse 14, because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. And so at the beginning, it talks about, in verse 1, that you have searched me and you know me. You know when I sit and when I rise. You perceive my thoughts from afar. You discern my going out and my lying down. You're familiar with all my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, you know it completely, O Lord. And so in these verses, David is reminding us of God's knowledge of us. But it's not just knowledge of books on a bookcase, but it's knowledge of intimacy in relationship, of intimacy as us as individuals. You've searched me, you know me, you know when I'm up and when I'm down. You discern. So it's not just an accumulation of knowledge, but it's the depth of relationship that God has with us that allows us to know that he is with us. And that is incredible. So God knows everything. You know, Jeff asked us at the beginning of our worship, you know, what's your day been like? Maybe you've had a horrid day and you've not shared that with anybody. Maybe you've had a great day. Maybe you've had a difficult week. And we think nobody knows. We think nobody knows what it's like for my week, what I've been through, what I am going through. But these verses remind us that God knows. God knows us intimately. He knows all about us. And in verse 4, where it talks about, before a word is on my tongue, you know it completely, O Lord. And in here we have the kind of, the relationship is shown by, in almost the fact that no words are necessary. So often you maybe have friendships or relationships where you feel the onus is on you to talk. So if I don't say something, nobody's going to say anything. Or perhaps you have a relationship where you think, I can just be in the presence of someone and not say anything because actually they know me so well that they can read my body language, my face, my facial expressions, anything like that. And David tells us that before a word is on his tongue, God knows it completely. And as I was preparing for today, I thought, well, David could have just stopped then, couldn't he? Why does he persist in writing this stuff down? You know, not just this psalm, but others of David. And because what was important was the relationship. We know that with our family or with our friends, that if you don't talk to them and you don't keep them up to date, then they don't know what's happening in your life. That's just a very basic way of looking at it. So my mum, if she doesn't get at least one phone call a week, then I'll be in trouble because she wants to know what's new, what's changed, or what's developed. And so words are necessary, even though my mum knows me, words are necessary because she wants to hear about me. She wants to know how Grace is doing, what Amy's up to at work. And likewise, God is interested in the relationship that we have with him. So he's interested in what we say, even though he knows what we're going to say before we say it. Well, why is that important to God? Because he's concerned about our relationship with him. He doesn't just want knowledge of us, of which he has it all, but he wants a relationship with us. And so that is what God wants for us, and that's what he wants us to want of him. So not just knowledge of God, of which David shows us in Psalm 139, what he knows of God, but that's not what's of most importance to David. It's the relationship with God that allows him to express himself so freely and so poetically in these words, but so honestly in verse 19, where you get this real change of tack, where he talks about the wicked, and we'll kind of get on to those verses a little bit later. So God wants for us knowledge of him, but relationship, and that's what God is hoping and longing for with us too. In verse 14, these familiar words of being fearfully and wonderfully made. We've heard tonight from Chris about what happened on the Ventures holiday over in Colwyn Bay. And on a holiday like that when I was growing up, and these words were talked about, but how we were made known first. And that's how it was sort of strap-lined by the preacher that week, that we are made known first, that God made us and he knows us. And that is the first thing, that's the most important thing for us to remember. And that person, this will mean more to some of the women here than others, there used to be a shop called MK1. And so Georgina's nodding my head, so I've definitely remembered that right. So this preacher reminded us, or said to us, when you walk in Nottingham and go through the Broadmarsh Shopping Centre and you see MK1, Tim's nodding his head because he knows Nottingham Broadmarsh Centre. Remember that you are made and you are known first by God. And those are the most important things in our relationship, that we are made known first. And so as we look through into verse 17, and we hear David's perspective on God. How precious to me are your thoughts, O God. How vast is the sum of them. Were I to count them, they would outnumber the grains of sand. When I awake, I am still with you. So even with all the thoughts David has of God, all that he knows God thinks about and the knowledge that he has, David can't comprehend how much God knows. And we can't comprehend that for ourselves, of how much God knows about us, how much God knows about the far-flung corners of the universe, that this is the God, this is the Creator God who made us, and that we can have relationship with him. Were I to count them, they would outnumber the grains of sand. And again, as I was preparing for tonight and thinking about how precious to me are your thoughts, O God, and it just rang as a challenge to me to think, do I think that God's thoughts are precious? And I know that maybe sounds a bit twee, but actually, am I asking God, what do you think? Am I studying his word? Am I taking counsel from other people in our Christian family to try and discern what God's thoughts on a situation are? Or am I more concerned about what I think? And so I'm not an opinionated 14-year-old anymore, but I'm still opinionated. And I still think I know more than I do. And so the challenge was to think of, are God's thoughts precious to me? Or is it just, well, I've prayed about it and I've ticked the box. And so now I don't need to ask again. Or I don't need to seek. Or I don't need to knock for the answers. So considering who God's, what God's thoughts are, then we see this change of tack in verse 19, which just comes out of nowhere, really. And I'll read it just because I think it impacts you as you read it in isolation as well as within the context of the psalm. If only you would slay the wicked, O God, away from me, you bloodthirsty men. They speak of you with evil intent. Your adversaries misuse your name. Do I not hate those who hate you, O Lord, and abhor those who rise up against you? I have nothing but hatred for them. I count them my enemies. Now, I don't know if David prayed or prays with his eyes open and was taken at a glance of someone, or if he carried it from his week to prayer. But the fact that he was able to be this open and this honest with God shows that he has a depth of relationship. Elsewhere in scriptures, it talks about David being a man after God's own heart. A man after God's own heart. And so David is able to be open and honest with God because he knows that's what God longs for. Even though God knew the words that would be on his tongue, David still spoke them out because he knew that God was interested in them. So if there are issues in your life that you think, I don't pray to God about them because I don't think he's interested, then the challenge for me and for you is that there is no area of our life that God isn't interested in. There's no relationship that you're part of, no circumstance you find yourself in work that God isn't interested in. He wants to know it all. He wants all of that relationship. Even if it's as strong as some of these words about people abhorring God, about talking about bloodthirsty men, God isn't interested in us just knowing about him as knowledge. He's interested in the depth of our relationship with him. So are you that honest with God that you can say anything to him? Because you can say anything and it doesn't shock God, because he already knows it, but he wants the relationship with us first. And with that in mind, as it comes to verses 23 and 24, these were words, as a graduate, I wrote down and memorized as part of my devotions. And that was because I was fully aware of that I needed to be searched and I needed God to know my heart and lead me in that way everlasting. At the Tuesday morning prayer meeting, we follow some of the patterns of the Northumbria community. And in our current pattern, these verses are there before our time of confession. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there's any offensive way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. David has looked out at these other men, whoever they are, wherever they might be, whatever they were doing. But he wasn't so blind as to think that he was perfect, that he didn't have to worry about what his thoughts were, about what his heart was like. And so the challenge is for us to think, do we allow God to search us, to search out the areas of our life where it's difficult, the hurt that remains from years and years of brokenness in our lives? And do we want to be led in that way everlasting? Just as we were singing, the words from John 10:10 came to mind, where it talks about Jesus being the one, well, in the context of Jesus being the good shepherd. And 10:10, so the thief, the devil, comes only to steal and kill and destroy. Jesus said, I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. In the context of that verse is Jesus as the good shepherd. And we look at these verses and we think of our good shepherd, the one who knows us, the one who knows us by name and knows how many hairs we have on our head, who through him we were all created, John 1 reminds us. That this is the one who knows us and loves us and knew us and loved us and died for us and for the whole of creation, not just for humanity, but to bring all of creation from the very beginning to the end back to order, back to rightness and wholeness again. You know, sometimes it's easy to say these words out loud in the sense of they're spoken and they're gone, but some of the words that we've read from Psalm 139, they should impact how we view God. They should impact our prayer life and how we view one another. Do we want to live these out, not just in relationship with God as if it's just us and God, but in our communities with your neighbours? Are you showing them that they are made and that they are loved first, that they are the most important things?